welcome to the Time Variance Authority. I'm Miss Minutes. Settle in, sharpen your pencils, and check this out.
Welcome back to I Want My MCU TV, the podcast that watches, overwatches, analyzes, overanalyzes, and possibly over-theorizes a little too much, but with love, about the Marvel shows on the Disney Plus network. I am Lisa Schmeiser, and with me, as always, are Don Melton.
Wow.
And Kelly Gamont.
For all time. Always.
Oh, I'm also madly jealous of both of their introductions now. And I'd like to welcome everybody to the meat of the podcast. As longtime listeners know, and new listeners are about to learn, our podcast is divided into three parts: recap, reactions, and really. For the recap portion is where one of us goes through what happened in the episode, what the relevant events and developments are. The reactions part of the episode is where we all talk about what we loved about the episode, what we found notable about the episode, how we felt watching the episode, what we paid attention to. And then finally, really is where Kelly and I react thusly when Don Melton drops some of his extensive Marvel Comics knowledge on us. There are also special guest appearances by Don's sister, often heard from, never heard directly on this podcast. All right, now that we all have an introduction of how this podcast is going to go, let's head into our recap section. Longtime listeners will also recall the preliminaries to the recaps are the assignment of the recap, where I ask Don, Kelly, would either one of you like to do the recap this week?
Fork no.
Okay, that's Don's ritual response. Kelly?
You know, I took a shot at it.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so this is great. I can't wait to hear this. This is fantastic. Let's have Kelly do the recap this week.
Okay. I'm going to say sort of. This is not full recap. This is not Lisa level recapping. I'm just going to tell you that right now. So here you go. Calamity. Kidnapping. Conniving, craven, pathetic worm. Creepy Ravonna. Cracked B-15. Connection. Crap! Can't remember. Chuck E. Cheese robots? Kill the variants. Cosmic disappointment. Color drop. Chaos in the chamber. Keepers of the timekeepers. Crap! Again! Capture! Credits! Richard E. Grant.
What I love is that's like spoken word, too. I could just see Kelly in front of a microphone as somebody gently strums like a bass behind her. Dum, 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 dum. Richard E. Grant! Everyone claps their fingers, snaps their fingers. General applause. Someone has a cup of coffee. What?
Dear listeners, I want you to know, you do not understand the level of crap I got for the post-credit scene in this episode with Richard E. Grant, finally.
No, you didn't. It was our expressed joy on your behalf. That's what it was.
Oh, I was so happy for you, Don. Yes. Like, the minute I saw that post-credit
scene.
There
you go.
We're going to move into reaction because I think first we all really need to react to Richard E. Grant's costume.
Yes! And I need to take a moment and say, I attempted to add a fourth segment to this episode, which was, right, I was right, because Don and I each have that moment from this episode. So there you go.
You know what, Kelly, I'll allow it. I'll allow it.
Okay.
I'll allow it.
Mm-hmm. So I did feel fulfilled that Richard E. Grant appeared, and I have a certain synergy with him because he and I are actually the same age, and I felt sort of proud and also embarrassed at this 64-year-old guy cosplaying as the 60s Jack Kirby comics Loki. It was absolutely priceless.
And I loved the look on his face. He stood there looking.
It's, yes, thank you, because that was just what I loved.
Precisely as happy as a man who was wearing that in San Diego in August would have looked, too.
No, just the look on his face what makes that scene, because he's just so unimpressed with everything.
It's just, everything.
Like, who cares if there's a child holding an alligator with a Loki headdress in front of him? He doesn't care. He's not impressed. He's not impressed with you, Tom Hiddleston. He's a man wearing giant yellow Johnny Weissmuller briefs, and he wants you to know that he is not impressed with you. I love it. Yes.
So the other thing that's inside baseball here is, you know, Richard E. Grant as classic Loki, and he's actually credited that in the credits, and Deobia Opere as boastful Loki are for sure Game of Thrones veterans. I don't know about Jack Veal as kid Loki, and whoever they cast as alligator Loki. I couldn't find the IMDb for Alligator Loki. I mean, what?
It's like one of those uncredited cameos that Edward Norton does.
Yeah. Loki Gator, yes, I'm liking exactly. for him, because it's nicer to say.
Loki Gator. And so the other thing about that is we know that after de-rezzing there, our Loki, as near as I can tell, I don't know if you noticed that looking at the scenery, that is... post-apocalyptic New York, because on the right side of the screen
that's
we see the
wondered.
Avengers Tower.
Yes, okay.
It's the Stark Tower. But did you notice it's not the Avengers Tower from the first Avengers movie? It's the Avengers Tower from the second Avengers.
Okay. I did not notice that. I noticed it looked like New York laid waste, and that was the part that stood out, but yeah.
So who knows what's going on there? But that's enough. Let's talk about the reaction.
Okay. One more second of inside baseball. I have in my notes, Don, did you see the poster? Because the poster on the wall, when B-15 was starting to crack, and she's looking at the poster about delete the variants or prune.
Are you sure? Delete. Yeah, that
delete
one.
Delete the yes. variants. Delete thoroughly or whatever. Yeah. Whatever it was. The face on that, was that what the clones looked like in the comic? Because I was like, we had talked about that in the comic, they were all staffed by clones who all looked like Mark Gruenwald. And so I wondered, I thought that looked like him, but maybe I'm just pattern recognizing non-existent patterns, which is entirely possible.
No, you could be right. I don't recall. This is back from the 80s and we were all stoned back then. So,
I was told we just said no in the 80s.
Well, maybe you did, but I went to a religious school.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, so that, yeah. Oh, say no more. Say no more.
That was my other tiny bit of inside baseball. I just wanted to ask you that. And I knew it wasn't going to be for later. So since we were saying that, I'd say that.
The darn thing is my sister, who's normally super reliable, has been super busy this week. And so when I call her this afternoon, believe it or not, she had not watched
what?
The episode
no!
yet. So I could have.
She's Don's sister.
She's let us all down. She hasn't. She's totally in command of her time and all that.
Yes. Yeah. She totally let us down. I'll tell her that.
Her fan club is literally meeting right now. Like, come on.
And so I told her, I said, okay, we got to get off the phone now, or I may inadvertently spoil the episode for you. Just reacting in horror, but I said, for God's sake, watch all the way through the credits. Okay, and that's all. And I hung up on her.
She deserved to be hung up.
And so she would be the person, because she's actually met Gruenwald. So I don't know. And she would probably remember that from the comics. But golly gosh darn it, Kelly, that is an awfully good question. I did. What struck me when I saw that poster, it was like, is that Howard Stark?
It did look very much like him.
I mean, that was my first thought. And then I went, wait, I think that's what the clones looked like. Yeah.
That wouldn't make any sense. Yeah, it probably. Well, it looked a little bit like the judge when Hunter A23 brings in Sylvie as a child. Yeah. Which we see, A23 is an obvious nod to Avengers number 23, when Ravonna Renslayer first appeared in the Marvel comics. They drop all sorts of little subtle things mm-hmm. like that in the show. So what we learn is that, for one thing, Sylvie now is obviously dyeing her hair blonde because she had Loki colored hair when she was a kid.
Well, you do that when you've had a bad breakup with your original timeline.
You do.
Yes, exactly.
We've all been there.
So actually, I have a possible foundling for the Home for Crackpot theories, which is Gugu Mbatha-Raw. Is that how you say her last name? Is clearly A23.
Oh, yeah.
And then she's Ravenna. And so what I'm wondering is, did she have variants she worked with? In other words, is A23 a different variant than Ravenna?
Oh. And
because, you know, when I was watching this...
No, because she answers Sylvie in the elevator.
I don't remember.
She could be messing with her head the same way that Mobius does.
That's true.
And because there's always... Look, what we know about this character... What we knew in the previous episodes is that she's very sparing mm-hmm. with information, right? What we learn about her in this episode is that she dreads going in to see the timekeepers. And then we also learn that she lies like a rug when it's convenient for her, because she does it for Mobius, too.
Oh, yeah.
When she tells him that C20 had it's terribly sad, the brain worms, and she was basically jello, and it was terrible. I have to spare you the sight.
Yep.
Right? And she spins this whole thing, and she does it in a way that is meant to manipulate him and play on what is his plain half-crush, half eagerness to be her favorite,
yes.
right? So what's to say she didn't lie to Sylvie?
I think the smirk on her face when Sylvie asks her what was the next event, and she says she doesn't remember. She mm-hmm. obviously remembers.
Well, she lied right there, but we don't know what the lie was, I think is the thing. And maybe she doesn't right. remember because it wasn't her, and she's smirking because it wasn't me. I just enjoy watching you suffer.
Oh, that's true.
So, there is that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get on that train with you. Because I think it's an unnecessary complication. I'm more concerned about, mm-hmm. what disturbed me is, you know, as Kelly said, we find out that the timekeepers are basically...
Chuck E. Cheese robots.
You know, rejects from... Chuck E. Cheese robots.
Mm-hmm.
Is... And Loki asked this in
who's
before
doing
he
this?
Gets zapped. Yeah, who's doing this?
Yeah.
And if she really is Ravonna Renslayer mm-hmm. from the comics, then the obvious person to be behind all this is Kang the Conqueror.
Okay, is it though?
Who else would it be?
So this is obvious from the comics, but I will point out that one of the things this series has done is say the comics are fun nods. And it makes you feel good when you know things about the text, but you shouldn't assume that we're going to lean into them.
They are not sacred texts, is what mm-hmm. I've learned. Yes.
Yeah, is this.
They are not a sacred timeline.
I don't think we're going to... I'm not sure we're going to have any sort of confrontation between, like, the guy, the wizard behind the curtain, as it were, and the people in the TVA. It seems like what the whole point of this episode was is to show that everybody is to show that the truth is what's going to make the TVA mm-hmm. fall apart. And it's already happening. I mean, you look at how easily Mobius was flipped, and look at how easily the two women that we saw who had their minds messed with by Sylvie, like, all it took was them recalling their old lives to decide that, oh, okay, what I was doing there is infinitely better than running around in shock gear and doing this. So.
And by the way, I'd like to call out one of the best performances of the episode was mm-hmm. when Mimi Masaku.
Oh, so good.
She was amazing.
When Sofia DiMartino grabs her arm mm-hmm. and there was this tears in the rain.
Yes. You know,
yeah.
Call out to Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
It was just sweetness. There were so many beats in this episode that were so good.
What I really loved about her performance was how she tried really hard. Like, you could tell that she was like, okay, the smartest play for me here is to pretend nothing happened to my brain
mm-hmm.
and just keep on keeping on. And I'm just going to exploit I'm going to exploit what the conventions are in this place and see how fast I can move through and get things done. And watching her pull off a deception while telegraphing it's a deception, but it's successful. That's really hard yes. acting to do.
Yes.
And she did it so well. And her whole episode, I would say if there's an MVP for the episode, like, it's clearly Richard E. Grant's yellow pants. But the runner-up is Wunmi. Because, oh, it was just so good. Every scene she was in was just mm-hmm. compelling to watch. And I liked it a whole lot.
I also want to call out, for total respect, Jamie Alexander coming back and reprising her role as Sif. And basically having only three or was it four lines that yeah. she has to repeat
mm-hmm. yes.
multiple times in this Groundhog Day loop mm-hmm. prison that Mobius puts Loki in. And doing that was just so cool. She's such a great actress, too. Mm-hmm. She's so underrated. And that dynamic with Tom Hiddleston was really cool. I also want to call out Tom Hiddleston when Mobius finally comes back in the room once he figures out Ravonna basically put Hunter C-20 down
yeah.
like a dog and lied to him.
I think that's the thing that hurts him the most is that she lied to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he goes and tells, you know, Loki, it was a great moment, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, don't let anybody ever tell you what you could be. You could even be a good guy, in case nobody's ever told you that. Mm-hmm. And the smile that Tom Hiddleston mm-hmm. gave him oh. in character, it was just hit me mm-hmm. right in the feels. That was two friends, right? You knew those two guys actually were yeah. friends.
Well, I think what it points out is that Loki is most comfortably himself when he has a foil. He's yeah. not good alone. And maybe that's the central tragedy of the Loki character is his behavior is innately distrustful and people can't roll with it, but he can't really fully be himself unless he has somebody that he's playing off of and conjoling to trust him and trying to get approval from. You know, we saw him do that with Thor mm-hmm. constantly. And we saw him do it with Sylvie in the last episode. And this episode, one of the reasons he's so insulted in this episode is because he wants Mobius back. He wants his work friend.
Yes.
Yes.
That said, he's still basically Wile E. Coyote in a suit because the writers are looking for excuses to, like, just wipe the floor with him every single episode. This poor guy doesn't stay vertical for more than two scenes.
Yeah, and that's a good thing because Hiddleston is, I've always thought he's a very underrated physical actor.
Oh, yeah.
That's something that he's really even had, I think, more of an opportunity to do in this series than he did in certainly the first Thor movie and the first Avengers movie. Mm-hmm.
Although Thor Ragnarok really... he got a chance to do it. It was pretty good.
I did enjoy that.
This is true.
The get help scene just cracks me up every yes. time.
Yes.
You love get help. No, I don't.
Yes. And get the first help. Time through is just delightful when you get help. What are you? Oh. Like as you go through the whole, it's just wonderful.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do takes like that and pull mm-hmm. it off. So. So that was really good. The one thing I didn't like about this episode, when they get to the timekeeper's room, which I thought was a really interesting design, it called back Escher.
Mm-hmm. Good old Escher. The timekeepers did?
Well, no, the room, the design mm-hmm. of the room, if you look in the background.
All I got from that scene when they walked in, I was just waiting for, is this the real life? Is this just fake?
No, what was really funny was I was watching it with my daughter, and the minute we went in there, the minute that the camera tracks in there and you see the three of them sitting, my 10-year-old says, there's going to be a wizard behind the curtain.
Yeah, because they looked like
they Muppets. Did!
But the thing that bothered yeah. me about the scene was the fist fighting just didn't mm-hmm. make a lot. I mean, it was well done, but I expected, you know, nuclear missiles and other things, yeah. you know, having that be the resolution of the thing that unveils the time keepers to be, you know, mindless robots. I think that's what Sylvie said. Mm-hmm. just seemed like a little low rent. But that was the only thing that bothered.
Nobody gets to see the timekeepers, though, yeah. is the thing. So when you don't see something, it's sort of like Bruce the mechanical shark when in Jaws. Like when you see the fin, it's terrifying. When you hear the music, it's terrifying. When you see some of the special effects, now you're like, oh, that's a pretty good robot. But you're not as terrified as you would be if it weren't. Like, I've seen actual great white sharks, and I can assure you, terrifying. Yes. So, you know what's not terrifying? Robots that look like sharks.
Yeah.
They're cool, but they're not. And I think with the timekeepers, between the patina of mystery and, you know, you restrict the access, people see glimpses here and there. You're already in an environment that's low information, high ritual. Like, it doesn't matter how they really did look like you said, refugees from Chuck E. Cheese. Like, it doesn't matter how terrible they look because no one ever sees them for more than a few minutes, and there's some dry ice, and they say things and all that. I think maybe they were supposed to look terrible because we're like the omniscient observer who's like, wow, this is messed up. People are getting like wholesale genocided by three puppets and some dry ice. Yeah. Whoa. So
that scene and the fighting mm-hmm. and the resolution, I wasn't crazy about. But everything leading up to that, I thought that was great. The scenes with Hunter B-15 mm-hmm. and Sylvie, perfect. The ones with Mobius and Loki, perfect. The ones with Mobius and Ravonna, I thought were very, very good, very appropriately tense and everything mm-hmm. else like that. And then to see Mobius de-rezzed like that was just, oh, crap. And then I remembered, he's not really gone because I've seen footage of the series, mm-hmm. You know, Owen Wilson and scenes that we haven't covered here. And I was like, so what's really going on? And when they zapped Loki in the end, I was like, obviously, this didn't kill him. So
the questions I have are, is it our Mobius that we're going to see in future scenes? Because we've already established that he's a variant now. Now we've established he's a variant. Will it be our Mobius or will it be a different Mobius who's on some sort of sympathetic resonance? Ideally, it's ours, since ours is a detective and he's got a rapport and he's unique in that he's had this set of experiences. And then the second question is, when you bzzz with a little yes. lighter stick, are these people waking up in like the timeline spare drawer?
This is my question. Is Loki ended up in a place where he was greeted by not one, not two, not three, but four Lokis in various formats, as Lisa would say. and
what one of them a lizard?
That's hence the various formats. So
I love Loki the alligator.
Loki Gator makes me so happy.
I love alligators, period. And so to have one with like Loki's powers is just delighting me. Alligators are just such adorable swamp kittens, and I want good things for them. And if that means like comics, swamp go for it.
Swamp kittens. I gotta use that.
I also love that. I also love that he's wearing a headdress. But additionally, so if Loki gets zapped into a place that is, as far as we know, full of Lokis, then does Moby get mm-hmm. zapped, get cattle prodded into a place full of Mobiuses?
Oh my lord.
Possibly, mm-hmm. possibly, because it depends on how many variants of him there
well,
were.
Well, and yeah, I see, this think. Just leads me to a bunch more questions. Like, how does it know to send Loki to where the Lokis are and send... I'm sorry, now I'm distracted because the back of my head just started going, I want to be where the Lokis are. And I'm like, shut
no,
up, brain.
No, no, resist it. I know. Stop it.
I'm trying.
It is entirely possible they're all sent to the same place.
This is my question.
Yeah. And so the variants die once they get there because it's a terrible place.
Right. And they could team up again, which is sort of what why I'm hoping that everybody ended up in Lokiville, because Loki land, Lokiville.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, because... it's got to be a buddy
because
movie
then
at this
we
point
need
on,
the two
right?
of them together again. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the question I had about that bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure if I was writing the show, I would not throw away the rapport between Loki and Mobius. That would be, you would just go out and shoot the writer for that.
Basically, yes.
This would be pointless. It's like slapping your audience. I mean, in the end, he still doesn't have to come out. You can still kill him off, but you don't kill him off now, right? So, I think that's probably what's going on. So I like that part. The other thing that we're going to find out is obviously Sylvie is holding the stick to Ravonna's head, and she's saying, you know, go ahead and zap me, which was kind of odd. Either she knows what's happens when you get zapped, or she doesn't know, because she seemed to be actually reverent with the timekeepers. Maybe she didn't know.
So you think he should just had like a religious crisis right there when one of the timekeepers' heads was revealed to be a robot?
Well, she was down on the floor and knocked out when the head came off.
So,
but that head's still rolling around. So now she's looking up. There's a timekeeper who's lost a head. She's like, whoa.
Yeah.
She knows it's a Chuck E. Cheese band now.
Either that or she's like, well, now that the sacred timeline can't be fixed with the timekeepers, I have nothing to... We don't know. She could also be counting on Sylvie to keep her alive because Sylvie wants information. After all, they had that exchange in the elevator where Sylvie wants to know what breach is so terrible that you had to take a child from their home. And she's like, I didn't care enough to remember. So maybe she'll try to bargain with that.
Yeah, Well, my take on it was that I never thought about she knows what happens if you get her with the cattle prod. I just sort of thought she knows the jig is up because I think she was going to get, she was giving Sylvie enough credit to know that Sylvie wasn't going to taser. And so, you know, said, do it, hoping that maybe Sylvie would be mad enough to do it. But just sort of having gone like, you know, if you don't, like, I can still talk my way out of this. I can act like I'm just as surprised as you, even though I'm totally not.
We don't know. This actually points to a frustration I have with the show as a whole. Is everybody is lying all of the time on this show.
Yes.
Right? Everybody is lying. There is no way for a viewer to be able to grab purchase on any of it and say, okay, we have this premise, which absolutely has not changed since day one. We know all of these characters. We know at least one character's motivation. We have no way to like even begin to try to grab purchase on the smooth surface of this puzzle box. All we can do is just watch a bunch of prop characters continue to like lie to each other and deceive each other. And we're getting like little bits and pieces, but we don't know any character's motivation at this point. We don't know any character's end game at this point. We don't know whether or not Loki has ever had a genuine character development beat in this entire series. We just have a lot of us projecting what we'd like it to be. And like, I find that kind of frustrating as a viewer, because I feel like this is less of a story and more of a, how ambiguously can I write this thing and then wrap it up? And, you know, I'm having a really difficult time engaging with this show because it's really leaned in hard to the, ooh, mischievous trickster, if nothing is what it seems trope, but it hasn't given us any hint of like a puzzle key to help us appreciate the craftsmanship or help us appreciate the fainting. I mean, like even with, say, a movie like The Usual Suspects, which is the ultimate in long con type things, because you've got this narrator, you establish rapport, and then all of a sudden like the switch flips and you're like, holy cow, everything makes sense. Like even with something like that, you kind of know going into it that this is a Shaggy Dog story. Right? Because it's somebody's thing. But with this show, you don't even have that. There's no framing device that really makes sense.
Okay, I disagree. And let me explain. I think if it's going to be a show about Loki, you're obviously going to have deception abounding because of who the character is. But I think, especially in this episode, we saw some real beats of truth and what is true. And people holding on to truth. One of those beats happened with Loki and Sylvie. One of those beats then happened that we saw with B-15 and Sylvie, and then the pushing apart and bringing together of Loki and Mobius, mm-hmm. where Mobius is telling him, you were completely right.
Yeah.
And do you trust me?
Mm-hmm.
I think hidden in all this deception are those things. And that's what's giving the series its heart. That's showing the development of this particular Loki variant. Something that's actually for him happening a little sooner because he's not rotting in a prison in Asgard like he did the sacred timeline. And so what we're doing is we're getting a sort of accelerated actualization for Loki. Remember when the second lore Thor film, which you all love,
mm-hmm.
where Loki is presenting himself being in control in his prison cell, but he's really wrecked the whole place and stuff like that. And he's having coming to terms with sort of who he is and his deception. We got a version of that with Loki and Sif this time, where he is being true to himself. So I think there's a lot of truth here. In fact, I'm actually surprised at the.
See, I'm not. So I don't. I have don't a different trust, take on I don't it. Trust Loki's thing with Sif, because when he had the whole and that little moment about I'm going to be alone and I'm going to suffer and all that, I was like, okay, this is him testing out lines to see if he can break the logic loop.
Wow, you really are cynical.
Yeah,
I totally took that as Loki being legit, but I am frequently the person who is spectacularly wrong about people's intentions. So I want to believe the best in people, and I am frequently let down for that type of scenario. I would look at that and be like, oh, he means it. Oh, I'll give him a hug, you know, and then get stabbed in the back. But can we talk for 1 second about that scene? Because Professor Lisa, this is actually a question mm-hmm. for you, even though I'm sort of skipping ahead to really.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a story from Norse mythology?
Oh, where, yes, he...
That's legit, right?
Yes. Okay. That's legit, is he cuts off her hair, and then he has to go get the dwarves to weave her new hair of gold, like actual gold, because the dwarves are basically like your fix-it army. So,
yeah,
so that's the thing
that legit. Loki, in Norse mythology, he didn't just cut off a lock of her hair. He cut off her hair.
Yeah, that's what I thought. She's bald. Yeah. She wakes up bald and is like, what in the what? why?
So that was legit. And that was the thing I was, mm-hmm. I'm like, I swear I've heard this story, but I don't remember it as the two of them, I guess. So I remember it being a story I had heard as a Norse mythological sort of tale. And so that was the thing I was curious about. Yeah. And so, yes, that's the case. Thank you.
By the way, I don't think at the end of these six episodes that Loki will be some hero or be truly reformed. Loki is still Loki. Mm. And it kind of ruins Loki if, you know, he's suddenly Thor after this, right?
Yes.
You don't want that.
No.
But you want people, you want characters to go on a journey and to learn something and be changed by that journey. How exactly it changes him, we don't know yet. And I find that fascinating. But insofar as truth, I think there is a lot of truth going on. So really, I wanted to make sure ahead of time that we talk about the timekeepers, because I've got some stuff to truth bomb you about.
So
that.
I want to come on the truthiness of this episode. And I feel like we weren't getting a whole lot of truthful moments until the end of the last episode, when Loki sort of forgot about having an agenda and forgot about who he was in it for, and, you know, all of the pieces that he had to move, because he was basically staring down the end of his life. And having that moment with her, I felt like that was the first sort of legitimate beat that we got in this, because the rest of the time, like, at least I have to give Mobius credit that he was very upfront about, you know, did I tell you that because that's a thing that I believe, or did I tell you that so that you will do the thing I want you to do? And you'll never know which one it is.
Well, I think he's playing Loki with the same thing that Loki plays other people.
Oh, he absolutely is. But he pointed out right at the beginning, like, you know, I'm not necessarily a person to be believed. And I appreciated that about him. But at the same time, like, you know, it made us wonder as viewers, like, well, which one was that actually, you know, and, you know, and everybody's unreliable. Like you said, everybody has their own agenda. Everybody's telling somebody else what they want them to know or what they want them to hear, and not like, here's what's up. And that part was sort of like, that has been sort of frustrating, because if there's not a thing that I can count on, I can't take that and springboard off into some goofy theory for the house. So when you don't have anything to go on, it gets pretty frustrating. So I can see where, I can absolutely see your frustration in this, but I was a lot more frustrated at the end of the last episode than I am at the end of this one.
Actually, speaking of the last episode in this one, I would have loved it if we had seen Sylvie's backstory open up the previous episode. Just have that there and have us know and have Loki not know until she tells him. And then this allows us to both see Sylvie's story and see how she frames her story.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, that would have been great.
I could buy that.
And especially since episode 3 was very backstory heavy for both of them.
Yes.
And was basically, you know, it's the road trip episode where they go on a road trip. And we discover that Loki cannot plan for love or for money, while Sylvia's like, oh my God, of all the variants to get stuck with at the end of the world, it's this one.
All the variants that said, in all the world.
Yeah. That said, I am now like passionately invested in seeing how Sylvie and Richard E. Grant handle each other.
That will be interesting.
Now, so am I.
By the way, just I pasted in a link to our chat while we were talking there. I did a search online, Kelly, and I think you're right. I think that is a good representation of
him.
Mark Grunewald. Yeah, that's probably him. So just so you know. This is the kind of thing I normally notice. So bonus props to Kelly for nerding me out.
There you go.
Ooh, I'm very excited to have earned my out nerding Gramps merit badge.
There you go. So do we want to get on to that third segment now?
Really? Yes, we do.
I think so. I think it's time for really.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's really it.
So the thing I was going to talk about was the timekeepers, and they're not, well, at least I don't think it's ever been in the comics where they're a bad version of Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln.
it's like the dark Disney.
Yeah, the very dark Disney. And so, but they were created by who is called the One Who Remains. He's basically the last director of the TVA, the last agent, and he creates the timekeepers. So the question is, and there is some nerding online. I was trying to track down crackpot theories because, you know, Kelly has that home for them. Mm-hmm. And the one that I read that was interesting, I'm not sure if it totally makes sense, but I at least went, was that their theory was that it's actually Mobius is the one who remains. And sometime in the far future, he's the one who essentially creates the TVA, which Mobius does, you know, is probably the, is an important figure in the TVA, but it's mostly like
he would have to be because his name is Mobius. We know he's going to come back on himself eventually, right?
Womp womp.
Yeah, exactly. Mobius M. Mobius. Yeah, exactly.
It's too bad they couldn't make him a palindrome. I mean, I get the reference to the Mobius strip, but if they had been able to make him a palindrome, he would be meeting himself coming and going that way too.
Yes.
There you go. By the way, did you notice in the one thing Mobius says that, you know, we've brought in
Kree,
Titans,
vampires.
Yes.
And never had a problem. Everybody knows what he means by Titans. These are the race of
Thanos.
Yes.
Yeah,
they are total badasses.
And they brought in the... Oh my gosh, you realize this is like a backdoor pilot for Blade.
Yes, exactly.
Oh!
Totally is. Oh. That's exactly where I was going.
Oh my God.
Lisa has made the cognitive leap.
Mm-hmm.
And my brain just melted a little. That would be so good. That would be so good.
It would,
yes, because then we could get back to actual vampires and none of this sparkly nonsense. Oh my God, it would be so good.
Oh my God, those are fighting words for some of the people in The Incomparable.
Yes, I know. But they are also well aware of that. And I know that there are not one, not two, but three incomprehensible episodes where people crack open bottles of wine and watch the movie together and giggle through the whole thing.
All that I hope is that if they do bring vampires back to the MCU, they are all played by Matt Berry.
Can we start that petition?
Like, they have the Taika Waititi connection. There would be nothing wrong with bringing in the What We Do in the Shadows.
You know that, and you know Taika's got Matt Berry on speed dial, and like, bro.
Oh God, I hope so.
Like,
oh my Lord.
Oh, that's all I want in life now. Okay.
Folks, I just want the listeners to know, this is exactly what it's like with these two.
All the time. Yes.
When we're not actually recording the
show. It still sounds like this.
The same kind of crazy.
No, Don.
And I
we
just,
are a
I
trial
just sit back
to Don.
And
we are a trial unto him.
I love it. I would totally watch that. Are you kidding me?
I want to put Matt Berry in everything, though. Like, when I was watching Star Trek Discovery, I was just so sad that they don't have him just swan on as like some exotic alien trader with like a cape and pirate boots and just
like Harvey Mudd.
Oh, better than Harvey
no,
Mudd.
No, but
come
like
on, man.
That same sort of like, I'm a flamboyant fellow that sashays in occasionally and messes up the program and swans off again.
Jackie Daytona in space. Jackie Daytona, human bartender in space. I would accept that too. But anyway, we've gotten really far afield.
All right.
Folks, you got to go back and read the whole canon of this show, because Kelly and Lisa, they not only invented but casted a whole set of spinoffs from WandaVision.
I really feel like Kevin Feige is just losing money by not having me on speed dial.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
How is there not an MCU flavored Golden Girls reboot? I will watch that so hard every day and twice on Sunday. Yeah. Honestly.
And who
with
knows?
An animatronic B. Arthur. Oh my gosh. No, this is the thing. Like, they should replace the timekeepers now with the animatronic. Like Betty White has won the tontine. The other three can now go be animatronic timekeepers, and Betty White can be like your final enforcer in the TVA.
Oh, see, I like that. She could be behind the timekeepers, and I would buy that
man,
theory 100%. But no, I'm talking about like Logan live. You know, Wolverine lives next door to like Rogue and Wanda and Agatha and Storm or something, and like the four of them live there and try to get dates and the whole thing. Like, I would watch that so much.
And hijinks ensue.
Hilarity ensues.
Hijinks always ensue. Yes. Yeah, there's some living, there's some laughing, there's some learning, maybe a hug.
Possibly a hug. Exactly. We get some stories about everybody's home planets. That's going to be awesome.
Oh, boy.
I mean, picture it, Lamentis 1, 2700 AD.
Yes, there you go.
So the question, the really question I have for you this week, I would like a little bit of a thumbnail primer on the Richard E. Grant iteration of classic Loki.
Same.
Just because he looks mean, and like, I love mean, don't get me wrong, but like, whereas Tom Hiddleston is like, hi, I'm extremely charming, please forget the wig, have I mentioned I'm charming? Like, this Loki's like, I'm going to mess you up, and then I'm going to go make a perfume because I'm Richard E. Grant. And I'm like, oh
this,
my God.
This Loki has had it with your nonsense is the vibe
he doesn't even brook. Like, what is his story? Like, what is his personality profile?
Well, you know, he started out as the god of mischief in sort of comics and became the god of evil. I mean, he is not a nice man in Frost Giant, and in the comics they spell it out that Loki, that Lofi, his actual biological father, kept him hidden because he was a runt among the frost giants, right? Odin basically went to Jotunheim. Yeah, I think it's Jotunheim. Went with his father. What the hell is his father's name? Bor. Odin's father, Bor. And he was basically cursed by a sorcerer. And Odin wouldn't help Bor. There was a lot of father-son drama there.
Father-son drama around Odin, you don't say.
Really?
Exactly. And Bor...
Hold on. Lisa, are you with me here?
All right. 1, 2, 3.
Really?
Yeah, I deserve that. So Bor cursed Odin, saying that he would take in a son of the fallen Lofi and raise him. And... And he wound up doing that. So, and partly because he wanted to, you know, sort of honor his father, who he realized he stiffed, and also he took pity on the runt sized frost giant. And so, you know, this can fork you up. Bleep that, Kelly. This can fork you up, which is what it did to Loki. And, you know, it's no wonder he became the god of mischief. The thing they did in the movies I thought was really good was make the connection between Loki and his mother. That was much better in the movies than it was in the comics, and gave a dynamic there that made, I think, the character richer and more sympathetic, in the sense that you could understand why he did the things he did. In the comics, he's much more of just a complete asshole, which is what, of course, Mobius calls him in when he gets thrown back in the time loop.
So he's like a real turkey in the comics, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah,
it's like the Draco Malfoy thing, where in the books Draco Malfoy is just this sniveling little prat, but then he's played by the charming little actor Tom Felton, and all of a sudden you have people writing fanfic epics about, oh, poor misunderstood Draco Malfoy, and now it's those British actors named Tom.
Like, they will reel you in, like, every time with all that charisma.
Clearly, we have Tom Hiddleston, Tom Felton. There's the one who plays the Spider-Man.
Yes.
Tom Holland. There we go.
Yes.
Tom Holland. So anyway, Loki in the comics has done just terrible things, far worse than
movie Loki.
You know, the stuff like movie Loki taking out a single guy's eye.
Ugh.
Ball. Yeah. That's like chump change. He has went after Thor so many times, and after the Avengers, and went after Jane Foster, you know.
Yeah.
Really, really horrible things. So, yeah. So if Richard E. Grant is playing that Loki,
this is going to be fun.
I wouldn't want to mess with him, even if he is... You know, if he's a guy my age cosplaying and that.
It's just the contemptuous look is what kills me.
I love it.
I love it so.
Yes.
Richard E. Grant, he's my man because he does that. So anyway, but that look, that particular look is the look that Kirby developed.
Okay.
He was giving me very, like, you know, classic Loki vibes. I have to say.
Well, this is the late 1960s, you had a lot of those high contrast costumes from what I can remember too, because I'm remembering like the look that Banshee had. Oh my gosh. Just the big cuffs on the boots, the whole Magilla. So.
Yes.
Oh yeah. It was a classic design. Yeah. I learned how to draw all that stuff when I was a kid, because it, you know, came in handy with, some of the underground comics I worked on. So that's a callback to that. But, you know, Richard E. Grant's physique, not quite the same as a Kirby drawing.
Oh, whose is? Are there people on this planet?
I don't know that anyone's is. Yeah. The Kirby physique planet is in a completely different timeline.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Whomst Among Us is...
So anyway, it will be very curious where they go with that. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, it'll be very curious to when and how and what the context of seeing President Loki is, because we saw that in clips from the trailer, right? So is that our Loki here cosplaying as the president, or is that another variant? Are there other variants that look like Tom Hiddleston?
Yeah.
We don't know. We only saw the four when Loki woke up. By the way, did you notice that if you turn on subtitles, he says, am I in hell?
Yeah.
It's H-A-L-E-L.
And it's like, yes, details matter.
Right.
That was so cool. They got
so
it right.
My question for this week was the fella on the left. So if you go from right to left, we've got Richard E. Grant, we've got Loki Gator, we've got the kid, and then we've got the dude on the left.
Boastful Loki. And he seems to be carrying a version of Mjolnir that is made from scraps.
Mm. This was the rest of my curiosity. I'm like, if they're all Loki, why is one of them not Loki? Because he's carrying a hammer. So yeah, I was very confused by that. That was why I had a question.
I got nothing. Okay.
Well, Dolly, I don't know who Boastful Loki is.
And by the way, I don't feel bad because scanning online, scanning YouTube, I mean, basically everybody's going, I got nothing.
Yeah.
Like, we have no clue.
Yeah, okay.
He's not in the comics as near as we can tell.
Yeah, that was my question, was tell me about this comic character. Well, he's not a comic character, so problem solved.
That answers it.
Yeah.
And I read a theory that Alligator Loki might actually be related to Frog Thor in some way.
Oh, that was immediately my first thought was, yeah, because Mr. Kelly took one look at that and went, wait, because I was explaining, like, well, they're all Loki. And he's like, okay, that one has a hammer. And I'm like, yeah, but still like a different timeline. Okay, so is that an alligator? I'm like, well, for a while, Thor was a frog. So it's entirely possible.
And did you blow Mr. Kelly's mind with that?
He went, what? And I'm like, comics? And he's like, yeah, okay.
And that's what you say. And by the way, everything I tell you about Loki and some of these other things that... You get a Marvel retcon at all tomorrow anyway, so.
Yeah, they're in the process of burning half of this down as we speak.
The odd thing is that...
Just now we get to the odd thing. Okay.
Well, they don't do that burn it all down in the MCU, though.
I know.
Kevin Feige has been... He's been a vicious taskmaster about continuity. Mm-hmm. And I really respect him for that because... moviegoers wouldn't follow this many movies. I mean, we talked about this before. This long with this sort of intensity, if, you know, they were all done like the Fox X-Men movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I cannot follow that at all. I mean, continuity just does not work there. But in the MCU... it does. And so I really
respect. Yeah, and I'm glad they've been consistent there. That's been good.
But if they're going to, you know, I really hope they just don't throw away a character name like Ravonna Renslayer so they can't use it later on with Kang. Because that is a great.
You don't cast
story.
Someone like. Well, actually, you know, we said this.
We say this every
Dottie.
Show.
Yeah.
There's somebody in every program we've watched. You don't just cast that person and not do anything.
Because I was like, she's such a great character. And I want to call out one of the incomparable podcasters, Nathan Alderman, who was like, she's got those big, beautiful, trust me eyes. And then she does this thing.
Yeah.
Which was a thing he said about this week. Like, she's such an enormously charismatic and sympathetic actress. And I would argue Marvel has always had a little bit of a villain problem where... it's really hard to be like, well, you know, they do have a point. Like, it's come close well, very close. Like, Killmonger is your best example of a villain that really lands. Ravonna Renslayer could be another one. Let's say she escapes at the end of this series. She goes. Like, either Mobius lets her go because he is sweet on her, or she escapes despite his best efforts. Then she's at large in the multiverse. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's exciting and fun. So I'd be like, and it would be also law of conservation of good characters.
And I'm going to back that. I'm on that train with you, Lisa, because one of the few things that I know about Ravonna Renslayer, because I think I asked you about this, Dawn, is that she at times has been the love interest of Kang the Conqueror, who we know is on the horizon in the MCU.
Yeah, in the next Ant-Man film.
So it makes a lot of sense that we might get to know somebody who then turns out to be, you know, teamed up in whatever fashion they decide that's going to take, teamed up with somebody that we know from something else. So for people who watched the show, watched Loki, for people who are enjoying this along with us, you know, those folks are going to see her and be like, oh, it's her, and know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then, but the people watching the movies don't have to have any of that, you know? And so, like, how they're going to do that, I think, is really interesting, but I also think it's very likely. And so that's part of what I think is gonna come out of that.
Because this is actually something else to bring up, too, is one of the risks that I think the MCU runs is the more involved it gets, the harder it is for entry-level people. And then you run into the Star Trek problem. Uh-huh. Where there's just so much weight of the series and all of these older fans who have been keeping up for forever and ever, who make it really hard for people who are new to the fandom to feel as passionate or to feel as if they're ever going to catch up.
Or feel accepted if they've only been a fan this long. I mean, we see that kind of thing all the time. You know, I know a lot of people who've said, like, I know you like Doctor Who, but it's older than me, and I'm never going to have the time in my life to devote to watching all of those. And I'm like, you know, you don't have to. Like, sometimes they are able to do that. And I think, you know, one of the things I think about a lot, Lisa, when I watch this is I watch it with Mr. Kelly, who checked out of the MCU pretty early on. And so watching with him is sometimes an interesting exercise because, like, he doesn't have any of the warm or fuzzy or both feelings for the Loki that we have from the end of Endgame. You know, the one he remembers is basically the one that we get at the beginning of this episode, because he saw the first Thor movie. I don't know if he even saw the second one, because Thor came pretty early on. And so, that guy from the Thor movie, like, why does he get a TV show? You know, because he doesn't have any of the investment in the rest of it that I do, for example, in watching those. And so I think that piece of it is also sort of interesting. I think of you a lot about, you know, not having to do homework. Like, if you just want to watch TV, or if you just want to go to a movie. And I'm going to be interested to see how this works, because I really do think that Ravonna and Kang are a team, whatever shape that takes, and that it's going to come into focus in the next Ant-Man movie for that reason. And so I feel like she has to escape here because we need her later. That's my theory for the house today. So there you go.
Yeah. By the way, listeners, I've been... For the last several minutes, as they've been talking, I've been nodding my head. I just want you to know that in agreement, I'm going, hmm? Yeah.
You should simply go, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I agree to all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So know that both of those points make perfect sense to me. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, it's, and you know, Kelly, like you said, you're watching it with Mr. Kelly. And like I said, I'm watching it with a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
And watching what she picks up with and connects to the fandom, I'm also watching to see when she nopes out and what makes her do it. And I just keep thinking, you know, there are those of us who have really warm and fuzzy associations with the comic books and love overthinking this stuff. While we are what executives would probably call an engaged audience, your goal is to grow engagement, and it's not necessarily by appealing just to the people who are going to be there anyway.
Yes.
So, yeah. So I'm kind of curious to see how they land this plane, because
me too.
This is the third series. It's the first one where it's the first one where I'm like, this could really be like the kind of thing where you're like, oh, I have to go back and watch all of it again now, mm-hmm. and pick up the clues. Or it could be something where you're like, okay, I feel like I just watched 6 hours of teeing up a movie franchise. Yeah. You know? And I don't know which way it's going to go. We have like 2 episodes left to figure it out.
Well, it could go both ways.
Oh boy. Yeah.
I will point out the plane we got in the first episode of this series did in fact mm-hmm. land safely at its destination.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. if that helps any.
Yes.
All right. It does.
It's just because I love that D.B. Cooper reference and I need to like hold that dear to my heart, because every once in a while people mm-hmm. still find money up here.
Even though my sister mm-hmm. did not watch the show before we record, my wife watched the show. In fact, she watched before I did.
Oh, wow.
Because I was busy with other things that morning. So I needed to watch that morning. She watched that morning. Mm-hmm. And she's the one who said, watch through.
Watch the end.
Watch all the credits.
She has also heard you talking about Richard E. Grant.
Yes, and
possibly more so than we have.
But after I watched, she said, "You know, now I'll cut them some slack," because she was a little dubious about where they were going last mm-hmm. episode mm. and the tonal difference and missing the TVA. And she said, "This episode was the payoff for that."
Okay.
Yep.
And so I went, you know, you're perfectly right there. That's exactly the way I felt. Because we got a lot of answers. We got confirmation on what Sylvie said the last episode about variants. And we got far more about who she was and her relationship with Loki and Loki's relationship with Mobius. Mm-hmm. And where Ravonna was going. So a lot happened this time, but I would like to point out we did miss out on 2 things
uh-huh.
that I'm pissed about.
Mm-hmm.
No Casey and no Miss Minutes.
Yes.
What the hell?
I am also grumpy about these things.
Maybe they'll be back. Maybe they'll be back next time.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, we didn't really get a lot of TVA in this episode. Like, we saw some nameless hunters. We got the hunters that we know. And Ravonna. But we didn't get any, like, there wasn't a lot of interaction in any other departments where we would have gotten a chance to see Casey. So
mm-hmm. there are some fan theories online.
Oh,
that who's really running the TVA?
Is it Miss
Casey and Casey and Miss Minutes? So.
Oh,
I think Miss Minutes running the TVA is much more likely.
Oh, that's entirely likely.
You know, I did. Yes. In fact, I think you suggested that week before last, right? Kelly,
that sounds like something I would have said, is that she's behind the whole thing.
I don't know. I feel like Casey is another faint, like oh my gosh, I'm forgetting her name from WandaVision, where we were convinced she was behind everything.
Dottie.
Yes, Dottie.
Yeah,
Casey is Dottie is my okay. theory.
Yeah, I after getting burned on Dottie, I would agree with
yeah.
you. So.
Yeah. So yeah. We'll see. So I think we have actually committed one of the venial sins of podcasting, which is to spend a longer time on the show, the episode, than the show was on the air. I think that's our cue to wrap it up for this week. What about you guys?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's about right. But I will say mm-hmm. we are not the only people who do podcasts about the show who commit that sin.
I only feel a little bit better about that.
Well, just because everyone else is jumping off the bridge.
Exactly.
Doesn't mean we jump off the bridge unless the area around us is on fire, and jumping off of the bridge gets us into water and safety. That's how that works.
There you
if
go.
Everyone else is jumping off a bridge, would you? Depends. Why are they jumping off the bridge?
Exactly.
This is a valid question. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, you can tell this is how I'm going to handle my kids' teen years. Instead of asking if everyone's jumping off a bridge, would you? I'd be like, well, what can you tell me about the bridge?
Yeah.
What have you observed about the bridge? What's around you?
What have you observed about the bridge? Okay. Oh, goodness. Okay.
All right. Okay. From my bridge jumping view, I'm Lisa Schmeiser. And with me, as always, are Kelly Gamont.
Thanks so much, as always. I'm telling you, Golden Girls Marvel reboot.
Oh, yes. And Don Melton, who will be watching and cackling as he sits next to Richard E. Grant in their matching Loki headpieces.
And the entire gown, yes.
Okay, I didn't want to commit you to the whole look. Accessories are always a fun way to try things on. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. We will see you next week for the penultimate episode of Loki, but not the penultimate episode of I Want My MCU TV.
Yeah, we're never stopping that.
This is hell. Am I dead?
Not yet. But you will be unless you come with us.